I'm going to see that, and then it's just the shift. Is the up and down?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, this one. Sorry. Okay, Sean. All you. Oh, you start.
Okay, so let me just reintroduce ourselves. My name is Terisha Sutherland, and this is my colleague Sharon Comerbatch Richards, and we're from St. Vincent. And we're just here to give a little insight on how things operate in St. Vincent where the borders are concerned.
We're not married.
Really?
No.
Don't try that,
Okay, so this is just a little structure of the different departments that is involved in border control in St. Vincent. So we have the forestry department, the fisheries department, veterinary department, plant protection and quarantine, and the extension unit to some extent. Phytosanitary certificates. So we receive an application to certify the plant product, determine the import requirements for the plant or the plant product, determine if you can verify the plant or the plant product. Also, just to add, where live plants or planting material are concerned, we do not issue a phytosanitary certificate unless a import permit is, unless an import permit is provided from the other country. So there's a sample of the phytosanitary certificate. Also, there's a small fee attached to it, which is $5 EC. For our import permit, there's no fee. It's actually free. So the general public will, or the So the import application process. Normally persons would either call or they would visit the office. They would fill it out in duplicates, and we usually encourage people to submit the application within 2 weeks prior to shipment. They would return it and approval will be granted within 48 to 7 working days. Sample of, it's a bit dated, but you know, this is what we work with. The applications.
Okay, so basically, this is what we work with. We have the name of the importer, your telephone number. The permit number is a number that we would give for our record's sake. The date, the exporter's name and address, mode of shipment by air or sea, what type of shipment would be, either cargo, baggage, mail. There's an estimated date of arrival, which means that, I mean, not everybody would know exactly when their product, because we had some cases where persons were writing up or applying for the permit and their stuff would not be expected to arrive until like 3-4 months after. So what we normally, we encourage persons to give at least a date so that we can work with in terms of the arrival time. You have the quantity, the name of the origin, and what is the purpose, and what would it would be used for, where it would be grown, the entry, the signature of the importer, and this permit is only valid for 6 weeks. This is just the addition. This is the bottom section of it. It's one permit, but it's only split because it couldn't hold on the. So these are some of the criteria that would take into consideration when you're applying for any of the commodities.
And that's where we give our requirements as to how we want to produce or the consignment to enter the country. For inspection, we usually work along closely with customs and the port health. So they're the one that will contact us when there's an inspection to be done on the ports. And as you know, we're not just inspecting on the mainland, we also have 32 chains of small islands. 7 are inhabited and 4 is what we usually monitor. So the 4 is, I think it's Bekwe, Musty, Kanawan, and Union Island. And we only visit these islands when we need to, when customs or our customer requests our. So at the airport, we have an office there. So an officer is stationed there from 7 to 7 p.m. Also, we have 2 offices at the 2 major ports. There are also other small ports on the mainland that is open, but we only go there on request as well. These are some of the regulated articles and the non-regulated articles. Also, fumigation for import and export is required. So in 2019, we came across the Cuban frog, which is an invasive species. I think it was on the 17th of July, 2019, we had people complaining about seeing the frog around the area. And, you know, everybody realized it wasn't something of the norm. And then I think it was the next day, it was discovered between a consignment for massy stores between the fruits and the veg. So the forestry department is who usually deal with this type of problem. So I think now it's under control because they went on an extensive eradication mission. It's a job well done. These are some of the countries that we export to frequently and import frequently now. Especially on a Monday, every Monday on a weekly basis, we ship to Barbados and Trinidad, the general public and also traffickers. So that's when we're most busy on the ports and also on a Friday.
So at the plant protection unit, they're the ones that normally do like surveillance activities, monitoring of any invasive or any pest that's as of interest to the ministry. So there's a surveillance team that's very much active. So the food fly surveillance team goes out on a daily basis. For the citrus silage, normally I think this would happen like probably every other month. Right now, I think they are doing the the Palmarum, the Rankerform Palmarum traps, actually those were made by the staff because they got some from USDA and it wasn't, they weren't as, what should I say? They didn't work. So the weavers were going in and out. I'm not sure how they got so smart that they climbed out of the buckets, but so we decided to put this into place. So we took the recycled bottles and we made our own chaps, which works perfectly. So they're also out in the fields now. And for the monitoring, we would have released, brought in about 20,000 of the tamaraxia to help to control the silage. And they would have been released throughout St. Vincent and the Grenadines because, of course, St. Vincent and the Grenadines, the entire country has the citrus greening disease. So we would have released the tamaraxia throughout, and they are now monitoring to see how the impact of how well they would have dealt with the silage. And, of course, the giant African snail, we haven't done anything in a while pertaining to it, but off and on you would have persons calling in saying that they're seeing this big snail and it's a giant African snail. So therefore the officers from the unit would go out, they would collect samples and try to determine whether or not it is the giant African snail. Thus far, none seem to be a possible African snail thus far.
So this, these are some of the prohibited commodities.
Okay. So when we heard of the horizon scanning, we weren't so sure as to what it related to. So we did some investigation and based on what it actually is, St. Vincent, we have not started the horizon scanning. Basically, this is what it's.
In 2019, a full PRA was conducted on the TR4. I'm not sure what template was used to do this, but it was conducted. I don't think we had finished it. We have no issue. So we're still fresh in the PRA arena.
We try. We try to so do something in that regard.
We, you know,
so I think now that we are here in this PRA training, we have a better understanding on what is expected of us in terms of a PRA, because probably what we were doing was maybe a TRA, you know, so I think now we can throw away the T and implement the P. Right. So we are trying, and I think we would continue because I'm very interested in this part of it.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that even though I could just figure out something, just put two and two together, figure out a test and try to come up with a PRA, I hope I can get some guidance along the line, but I am going to try. I will try.
Looks like you're already doing the research anyway, just to be able to slot it into
right. So we'll
and
get
now,
there.
Now that we have this template, this is a lot easier than the one that we had previously. So
so do you know the order with the TRA?
Repeat that?
Who was the author of the TR4 PRA?
I'm not sure. I didn't really work on it. I'm not sure. I was told that it was done, but to give any details, I'm not sure.
I think it was Marcus Richards. Yeah. Okay, so the Ministry of Agriculture, we do have a communication unit. So we use the radio, the television broadcasts and leaflets and things to get some. And when whatever information we need to get to the public, this is the that we usually go through. Thank you.
Any questions for John? Thank you very much. All of the
6 meters.
Yeah.
Prince, you didn't hear me say that.
There's a comment that's come through from Cheyenne in Sydney, who said that she appreciates the honesty of your talk.
Thank you. Thank you.
I just want to make a question in regards to the farm legal traffic.
Mm-hmm.
You were saying that initially the legal you know, what was the change you made?
Well,
what do you think would attract that you have in it?
Cane.
For sugar cane.
Yeah.
Okay. We in Grenada we used to use cane too, but in Grenada we now use molasses.
Mm-hmm.
So if dilute the molasses with the pheromone or whatever, so once you get it.
No, the problem wasn't the attractants, you know, the problem was the buckets.
Okay. The attractant brings them.
Right, but to keep them.
Is your food source.
But if we tried molasses as well too, you know.
Yeah.
So we had the molasses and we had the cane, but when you and especially areas that are highly infested with the weevil, there's none. So the buckets, I think, how should I put it? Okay, just say that they're going in and out of it. Yeah.
That's why I say, I think the molasses will want the liquid one they get in, they cannot get out. And the sugar cane, it will dry out, so you have to replace it for the tree. So the molasses will set it for a week or two.
Okay.
Are there any more questions?
With respect to horizon scanning, you said you don't, but do you, the information in terms of the best risk characterization that takes place at the driven of the CDH level, puts it down to you guys? That's one of the things that concerned me about this. I mean, seeing people in this room didn't seem to be too aware.
You're trying to make Sherry say I'm saying something now. Kind of putting me on the spot.
If it did, we were not aware.
I had another question about the family. I think it's more generally this whole realm. Do you think in the Caribbean the impact of palm is a much more important species compared to the Caribbean male? That palm beaver seems to be not that widespread, but the palm seems to be that has already arrived on more islands.
I don't think it's in too many islands, is it? You're one of
the great family.
Palmaro is more, it's not in all the territory, but it's not good. And it's really bad, it's really bad. It's bad. So that's where again, you're right down. And you've got Aruba and the Netherlands.
That seems to be the only place where there the newest probably. So then we did this sort of example of PRA of that species, we tried to cover Palmaro visits because it was at that time that as well the species that was one that was introduced to California, and it was kind of misidentification as weevil, then they sort of announced that it is a different species. But again, that wasn't really that widespread. So we saw, or if you do a PRA, red palm weevil, well, automatically, more or less, a PRA for the other species in terms of regulation and measures. And so it's just that it's different in the sort of trade links. Yeah. And, but that is as well something you sometimes can think about, whether you can condense your work if you have to deal with two very similar speeches that you kind of may conduct just one PRA. It's the only problem is formally you can only title the speeches with one name because it has these automatic link that to the data sheet and draws all the information from the data sheet to give it the title name. But that doesn't stop you in an explanation in the next book. This PRA is actually not only covering species one, but we have done the research so that it was applicable for the two species, and it's generally for the army. So that would save you two separate PRAs. You could, of course, have it a bit slightly cleaner way. You do your PRA for the first species alone, and then you do a second one for the second species and transfer most of the information from the first one into the second one, and then you just adjust relatively few places to update it to be the second one. So you get the two options. The only thing what the system can't do at the moment, unfortunately, is that it can't copy online PRAs. So it would be basically a manual transfer from the information from one PRA to a new one. So you have to do a lot of copy and paste. And at the moment, and we have recognized that as a problem, and we're working at this, but at the moment, you can't just duplicate PRAs and shift them. Any more questions? There's another one, and you're very interesting to hear about the human tree frog. So, what were the actual measures which were not eradicated? Did you spray any pesticides or just collecting it? Or
like I mentioned before, the forestry department are the ones who dealt with it, but I think they did it physically. So they extracted.
So you really caught it at a very early stage.
Yeah. So it didn't get to spread out to the area that they found it. So
probably because Bob has to dip in and out, so we both kind of have a presentation on Trinidad as such. But in a sense, what we first starting with moving on to the next presentation, wanted to ask you if anybody needs certification of attendance to the training course. If that's the case, just let us know and we can put that in place after the workshop and send that out. Anybody?
Is that something that will make a difference, or it doesn't really matter? Is it okay to participation?
I think it would make a difference.
So, how many would like, to be honest, that we normally do it, but I think it's the main. How many would really like to have a certificate of participation? Okay, so we can just do it for the
And anybody from the people joining remotely? So
I can send an email.
Well, just give me a couple of minutes to set things up.
So, he was like,
All right. We started to talk a little bit yesterday about risk management, and basically the last part of the PIA, where we have basically these boxes which we can tick, where we then fill, which we can fill in this information covering the range of different measures available for the control of our target species. Or the prevention of it coming into your country. And so we talked about how to do that formally, and I want to give a presentation now to kind of give you a little bit of guidance and advice, how you can go about it regarding the contents to fill into that part. So we start with the risk management after we finished, after we finished the risk assessment. And at the end of the risk assessment, we have to make the decision, are the risks associated with our assessed species acceptable? Then the PIA ends there and we don't have to do anything. But if we say, oh no, the risks are not acceptable, they're unacceptable, then the PIA continues and moves on to risk management. There we have to kind of consider three main steps or three main thoughts, and if you like. So first we have to kind of identify the options, what is available, what is the range of measures in place to prevent the species from coming in, or if it has, then will come in to control it, and to evaluate these options. Are they actually suitable for my country, for the situation we are in? Are they feasible? Are they too costly, or just the right thing we can implement? And once you've done that, you in your recommendations, then you select the options you want to bring forward and recommend for implementation in the next steps. So this is just to recapitulate the title page of the risk management section of the PIA, where you basically can assign any phytosanitary measures to the pests or the individual pathways, and a little bit separated to at the place of origin, at the place of entry, and then post entry as well. Sources of information to kind of populate your boxes there. I think the first port of call can easily be the invasive species compendium and the crop protection compendium, because normally the data sheets for the individual pests and diseases there have a fairly kind of wide section on control options in there. This is definitely the case for all the species for which we have fully developed data sheets. there are, of course, a number of species for which as yet we only have basic data sheets, and these quite often lack a detailed control section or prevention section. And so in that case, you would have to kind of start and look a little bit further afield and see if you can compile the information which is available about your target species. A couple of other online databases, which are really kind of valuable sources for information. It's a Global Invasive Species Database, GIST, or PIA, the Pacific Islands resource, which as well has data sheets for a number of invasive species, particularly invasive weeds. And so we've got the online links on this slide. So when we set the presentations after the workshop, so you can directly kind of open up these sources of information and can have a look whether your target species is covered there. Then of course, various MPPOs might have already issued data sheets or brochures, particularly farmer extension services always give normally in their leaflets advice how to deal with particular species. And for example, if you deal with a species which arrives from the United States, normally in the United States, there always exist fairly extensive farmer extension services, and a lot of the information there will be publicly accessible online. And then there's a fairly large area of specific literature on commodities and individual pests and diseases. For example, if you are dealing with a coffee pest, then there are certainly quite a number of handbooks out there dealing with pests and diseases of coffee and so on. And they usually as well give, depending of course on the year these books have been issued, but normally then have relatively updated information on how to deal with these species. So individual measures can be implemented, as I said before, for individual pathways. And you can cover, particularly if you have a pest initiated PRA, where you have identified a number of different pathways for these species, they will show up individually in the risk management option. And so you can kind of cover them separately with according measures. Or they can be kind of, you can kind of specifically allocate them to the commodities or materials you are dealing with. As I said before, they're kind of as well in terms of the sequence, goods are being moved, you can separate your measures geographically to divide them up between the measures to be implemented at origin in the exporting country, at the point of entry, and then within your country or within a relatively newly invaded area. Going a bit more details in the measures regarding pathways. Well, this is a little bit something you already kind of probably will have covered in most cases already when you initiate or start your PRA. It's always important to consider all possible pathways. I mean, we had this discussion about the palm beetle, where kind of I said, oh, no, just look at the plant material. You don't have to look into kind of associated soil and so. But if in doubt, it's always better to look into more pathways, and even if there's not much information in it and you come to the conclusion it's actually a minor pathway which doesn't need to be followed up further, initially it's always important to consider as many pathways as possible. So the main one of course will always be the traded plants or plant products for most of you, but as well consider natural spread of the pest, as we were discussing as well yesterday with the red palm weevil, strong flyer, which can cover fairly long distances. And if you, for example, have a recent report that in some of your neighboring countries, which might not be so far away, may have recently been invaded by a specific species, then you have to consider whether through natural spread it may as well arrive in your country. Then, of course, the entry with passengers, with airplanes or ships, vehicular transport, or as we discussed yesterday, anything attached, for example, with the import of vehicles, used cars or tire, or yeah, which would fall a little bit here in the last example listed, the associated materials. associated materials as well would, of course, be if you import rooted plants, the kind of the soil attached to them, and yeah, similar things. So, yeah, identify points at which mitigation measures might be applied. So, for example, yesterday we were discussing it would be good, better to do, if car washing is a measure, it would, of course, be much better to implement that before the shipping starts, so at the exporting country, rather than once the car has arrived into your country. Identify possible mitigation measures at these points. So things really kind of in a line, measures which kind of reduce the risk bit by bit during the whole chain of events, from exporting, arriving, entering, inspection, and see if can implement something at the furthest point first, and if that is enough, and if you decide that is enough to mitigate the risk sufficiently, then you really don't have to kind of implement additional measures later on. As I said before, you have to kind of as well then start selecting or assess the measures which are listed for this species, whether they are have been proven to be effective, efficient. So if you can implement them without an immense burden on your staff capacity or costs, and yeah, whether they basically are realistic to implement. And then the last step, when you have kind of assessed all the measures that way, then you select the appropriate ones. Going a little bit now into these different points where you can implement your measures, starting with the country of origin, with plant commodities, for example, there's a lot of measures which can already implemented in the area of production. Sometimes it is might be even sufficient if you have a recorded presence absence of your target pest or disease in the region of production. So we had this example yesterday with the import of khaki fruit from South Africa, that some of the pests recorded for South Africa and in other parts of the world being recorded as associated with khaki fruit in South Africa, they don't overlap. The pests have been recorded on other commodities in another part of the country, but not in the part of the country where the khaki production takes place. So if you have that, and if you can have that confirmed by the exporting authorities or the producers, then that of course is of huge advantage. Then of course a lot of producers, they generally have implemented a sorrel pest specific surveillance. So for example, in khaki fruit, that people really kind of check the crop in the field, whether there is any diseases present. And and there may be as well official measures to maintain a pest-free state, which then later on can be documented through a phytosanitary certificate. So this of course, easy as possible if you import commodities from greenhouse productions, which can be a little bit easier, be maintained pest-free. This leads a little bit kind of to more specific measures on the crop level. So the treatment of the crop field at the place of production, in case they know they have to kind of keep an eye on certain pests, and there are certain regular applications of pesticides or fungicides in place. As I said, growing plants under protected conditions in glass houses or under polytunnels are less likely to be infested by pest species. We talked a little bit earlier in the week as well about the specifying time of the harvest. So if the production of your product takes place at a time where some pests may not be around and active, this probably is not happening very often, but that can in some cases as well be the case. And as I said, then this can all be reflected through phytosanitary certification. Commodity measures itself, not really applied to the crop in the field, but still in the country of origin, could be some inspection, laboratory tests the producers put in place, or to put in place the prohibition of some parts of the host or commodity you want to import. I think we had somebody said earlier this week that to import peppers only calyx free to avoid the importation of a certain pest. Restricting the composition of consignments. We were discussing that sometimes you don't get the issue out a permit for, let's say, only lemons, and really you can allow only the import of lemons, but you kind of issue it out for citruses as such, which then kind of can increase the risk of importation of some of the pests, which may be on oranges, but not on lemon or vice versa. You can, in some cases, it may be required to store the product you want to import in pre-shipment quarantine. So this, of course, would be an option for products which are not quickly perishable, and that time is not such a stringent issue. Or instead of quarantine, it could be a storage under specified conditions for preparing the consignment. So specific measures in regarding the packaging or temperature where things are stored, really as well, to kind of mitigate any infestation with pests. Generally kind of a treatment of your commodity prior to shipment a thorough, basically, inspection before getting things shipped off. And I think you were mentioning as well that sometimes you are going out and visiting other country to inspect the situation at the source, and whether you can mitigate the risks there accordingly. Pathway measures, targeted inspections and publicity and fines or incentive to kind of make exporters, importers comply to the measures you're suggesting. That was as well kind of important subject we discussed quite frequently, or which came up in the country presentations particularly, kind of, that, for example, you don't want to deter importers too much with very complicated or costly regulations if you can avoid that, but then really kind of making them concentrate on the really important implementation of really important measures. And there could be then as well specific measures regarding the pathways for machineries and how they are transported or packaged. Again, the example of cars is a good one. It's neither the same, of course. Washing cars at the place of origin would be better than washing cars after arrival. But there is as well something, even with new cars, you have to consider that sometimes commodities are stored for a long time before going on a boat. So there can as well be new cars are often parked in large car parks prior to sending off. And cars are notoriously to contain little different species of spiders, which kind of build their nets in these outside structures of car. But I mean, there's a specific spider in Europe, which is called the side mirror spider, because it always builds a net between the main body of the car and the side mirrors. And so as soon as you would leave a car out just a short while, they would colonize that. So then measures to kind of shorten that time or do implement and even a measure to clean new cars. Another example, for example, is the import of compost bags, of sterilized composts. So normally you wouldn't fear too much of anything coming with it in terms both of microorganisms or invertebrates if a compost is sterilized. But then again, these bags are not tightly sealed and they're usually stored outdoors or in kind of relatively open warehouses and sometimes over a long time. So by the time they get loaded on the ship, they're not really sterile anymore, and some of the pests have already had the time to colonize these. So these are all kind of sort of things to consider and adjust any measures accordingly.
Just appreciate that work. That's a measure I think that is important to look at when it comes to the shipment of plant material. That's like that. Mm. For example, when you have huge infrastructures like hotels that are still being built, then you have requests for landscaping material. So they will draw plants from different nurseries before shipping. It's something I think that is a good measure where plants are consolidated, yes, both through a period of treatment and inspection at the point of origin.
Yeah. And then I don't know if that is already showing up here as well. You can extend that sometimes to the measures in transit during shipment. So that depending on the time of the shipment, that can already as well count as quarantining. Your goods for and depending of course as well under the condition these commodities are transported, they as well kind of may allow the kind of the extermination eradication of some of the pests and diseases associated with your commodity. So you can kind of some specific measures might be that you request a certain temperature to be applied, which doesn't negatively impact on your commodity, but that the number of the associated pest species may not be able to cope with. The type of packaging is as well important, that you don't have opportunities during transport that from somewhere else on the ship or so that something might kind of get into your commodity during the process of shipment, or that for example, your separation of the individual commodities, that there might be no cross-contamination between different goods transported in the same container or on the same ship. You can, of course, use fumigation or other chemical treatments on board of a ship. So that's particularly in the depending how tightly sealed containments are, that might be a, or at least for some commodities, for some plants it might be too detrimental, but for some commodities that's a way forward to really kind of ensure that your product is pest free. And then of course inspections can take as well place in transit. So either kind of when you're loading the ship, or then when it arrives at the destination on the ship and not on land. So that would still count as an in transit measure. And then of course, there's a number of things which are available once the goods are arriving in your country. So we talked a little bit about the prohibition of commodities, so that you say we don't import bananas at all from any country, or we don't import palm trees from countries which have already lethal yellowing, and so sort of relatively specified. You can announce more generic measures, or kind of a little bit kind of limit your restrictions just to certain pathways. No, for example, on Santillana, you're not allowed to bring in any banana products at all from any country, because that's an unusual island in that way that it hasn't got any banana diseases at all at the moment. And they, of course, would like to kind of keep it that way. And but that's, of course, it's not always possible. A prohibition should really only put in place if other treatments or inspection techniques are not available to effectively reduce the risk to an acceptable level. And it should be really a measure of last resort, because of course prohibition of the import kind of impacts negatively generally on your trade, and you want to avoid that as much as possible. In any case, always kind of should adhere to the IPPC principles of necessity, which are science-based, and should manage risk according to the minimal impact. So select the measures which are easiest to implement and don't cause too much negative impacts for trade or other associated aspects. We haven't talked about too much of documentation. That, of course, is as well important in the process implementing all the measures. Try to send certificates at the top of that, which give you an official assurance that specific import requirements have been met, and confirms that certain risk management measures have been taken. So they will as well confirm that these commodities have been sprayed and treated at the point of production, the place of production. Well, they only should be required for regulated articles. And if you have, we were as well saying that St. Vincent, you divide the commodities as well up into regulated ones and unregulated ones. For unregulated ones, you will certainly probably as well scale back on your documentation. You don't put in an unnecessary kind of bureaucratic process where it isn't needed. So other examples of documentations, import permits or the IPPC stamp for the on the wood pallets and the wood packaging, and other phytosanitary certificates. We talked as well a little bit in the past that awareness raising can as well kind of reduce the risk of the accidental introduction of pests and diseases significantly. So that is as well and can count as a specific measure for individual pests and diseases. So the education and information of travelers, importers, for the whole kind of trade industry, the government and the public will help you there in minimizing the risk of introduction of some of the species.
There is one item that is missing from this list, which we asked for it down with some comment.
Say again.
Treatment certificates.
Treatment certificates.
Along with the representative, ask for.
Yeah, I think it was hidden here, but it confirms that risk management measures have been taken, so that would fall a little bit with that, so that certain steps and treatments have been implemented.
Yeah, but there's a specific piece of documentation,
especially
in the case of communication, what fuel that was used, under what pressure condition, etc. We asked for that because sometimes you come up with either countries or importers that once inspection is done and the regulator has to come, they will send you a flight center certification. We want to be sure that certain treatments have been done and the competent authority in this country issued that certification.
Okay. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I think it's a very important. So, in the last really step, when you you need to do is when you have compiled all the information for the individual measures and what can be done at what point. And is or has been implemented in the past in other places and or may already partially implemented anyway in your country, even if you're kind of dealing with a new pathway or a specific new pest, you need then to kind of select the best suitable package of these measures for your place. And again, as I mentioned before, these measures should be cost effective and feasible. So the efficiency of it plays a very large role in this. So you don't want to kind of put in very costly measures, which in the end don't help very much. Maybe in some cases, even things like very costly surveillance measures where, yeah, for example, if you use a trap, which doesn't work, you should abandon that and replace it with traps which work much better. And always go for the most cost-effective one and the one which, in terms of the pressure on the capacity on the available staff time, easiest to deal with. As I said before, you shouldn't be restrictive on your trade if. Not more than necessary. Of course, in some cases, the prohibition of the import of certain commodities is the only way. There are no other measures available to deal with that species, but then you have to kind of do it. But if there are alternatives available and you can avoid that, then you should kind of use these alternatives and only use the negative impact on the trade as a last resort. And then, of course, if you have already existing measures in place and they are effective enough, then there is really no need to put in any additional new measures.
I don't always go this point. The last point there, it does not always work. It's an important country. Usually we import from other countries. It's expected that we accept point number three. Not impose if existing measures are effective.
Mm.
But when we export, it's mandated that we take those things into consideration. So even if the existing measures that we have effectively ensures zero pest transfer, the importing country in that case will not accept the commodity unless we meet the specific requirement that they're asking for.
Okay. I understand.
So
yeah.
It works in one direction and sometimes it
goes with the other. Yeah, you're right. So then basically you have to comply to their requests and you want to export to the importing country. But maybe
this is one of the things that we had to a few years ago I served with a team from the IPC. We were looking at systems approach. And it was difficult to convince certain countries that measures implemented along the production chain, the commodity, actually ensure the minimal risk was it, you know, of pest transfer and does not necessarily require irrigation or those type of measures. It was very difficult to do that.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what you've done before.
It doesn't matter what you've done before. This is what you want, and this is what you have to do.
Yeah.
If you want your commodity in my country.
It may then well be the case if you have your measures in place, which are then not recognized in other countries, and they want to have something different. That maybe there's something in it in the next line. Different measures with the same effect should be accepted as alternatives. Maybe you then can, if you have to do the other measures anyway for your export, you may then get rid of some of your alternative measures to have not to deal a double sets. And so that would potentially be an option. Might not work in every case, but maybe there are some scenarios where that would be the possible. And then the last sentence here, for pest diseases already present, the import measures should be not more restrictive than measures applied within the PIA area. So we had the presentation about the bond tick, and that, for example, that as well, there is kind of there are measures in place to avoid the import of ticks and restrict that in their regulations. But these measures shouldn't be stronger than what you have as well in place to deal with the ticks which are already present and relatively widespread in your area. That, so just as an example. So you have to consider that, because it won't give you any more advantages. It won't kind of help you in much in controlling the target species. So if it is anything which is, for example, already widespread established and you don't have any really control measures in place, so why then putting in very restrictive measures to get a few more, to avoid the coming in of a few more individuals of the same species which you're already dealing with? Evaluating options. So when you select them, you should kind of, as I said before, look for effectiveness, efficiency. So effectiveness, really, how well can they really control or minimize the risks? Efficiency, kind of how easy are things to implement and how comprehensive things can implement. For example, if you have to install a very complicated facility or lab at one entry point, you have to kind of consider you might have to do that in all the entry points of your country, which might then not the most efficient way to do. So it as well relates to cost effectiveness, the next point, feasibility. I mean, there are what would be an example for something which wouldn't be very feasible? But for example, some pests can be detected through specially trained sniffer dogs, but they, of course, are very costly and difficult to train up. And it may not be feasible for you kind of to train up generations of sniffer dogs for one specific pest species, which you may be able to detect in a much easier, more feasible way. Reproducibility, that's another thing. You may come across sometimes information that one country puts in a specific measure, but the circumstances may not be in place in your country to set it up in exactly the same way to it as well then achieve the same effectiveness. And then you have to consider again the potential negative social, economic, or environmental consequences. For example, if you go a bit over the top with pesticide treatments of any consignments, that may have a negative impact on human health or in the place that is applied as well, the surrounding environment, potentially groundwater contamination. And so these as well all need to be aspects which need to be taken into account. So once you've done that and you kind of assess all your management measures, put them all in place, you can list anyway all the measures for a specific target pest and put them into the PIA and list them all. I think just for to have it as comprehensive as possible, I would always kind of put all the information I can come across in there. But then you can later on say, or at the bottom of a specific measure, say this measure doesn't seem to be feasible to be applied under our specific circumstances, or should be replaced by the more efficient measure listed under so and so and so and so, which we think is the better option. And you conclude at the end your PRA. And the pest risk management conclusion might be that you have selected one or more mitigation measures which are already in place, and it is all right to leave it like that. Or you have selected one or more mitigation measures which you haven't got available at the moment and you need to still put in place. Or you come to the conclusion, we can't do anything about this. There are actually no proper measures which we can put in place, maybe except for complete prohibition of import. So, but still, in all cases, you can come up at the end, for example, in that box, next steps, with some recommendations. If you think suitable mitigation measures are already in place and really don't have to change something, you recommend that. You can say you just want to keep the status quo. You have properly risk assessed this new pest or new pathway and come to the conclusion it doesn't increase any risks, any existing risks any further. Or you come to the conclusion there are actually some additional measures which are, for example, then used already in other parts of the world, in other countries, and you suggest to implement these as well on top of existing measures or replacing perhaps some of the existing measures and integrate them into your whole biosecurity procedures. Or if there are no suitable mitigation measures currently available, you could as well perhaps consider initiating research kind of to develop new methods, which might be then in the future suitable and help you combat your target pest. So that's all I wanted to kind of raise a little bit surrounding the the part of the pest risk analysis, which is the risk management. Any questions?
Generally accepted being regulated by the risk assessment that have been done measure that is proposed based on the measures that is proposed by the risk assessment recommendation would be acceptable generally, but maybe through thoughts of maybe food security situation, in terms of contaminants, etc., that measure is no longer acceptable. I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
The Caribbean produces bananas for export. Banana fruit for export. However, because of black sigatoka disease and crown rot incidents in bananas and plantains, a generally acceptable molecule for treatment would have been Musil. Musil, it's a fungicide. Now, and that is, I'm asking this because that's where Codex and plant health get sort of trapped. And you're left with what sometimes the plant health alternative does not meet that of Codex. So someone decided that Musil was carcinogenic. Mm-hmm. Then you have MRLs being dictated. And now that creates a barrier to trade. So that's the question. How maybe it's a point for discussion, but I wanted to get your take on that.
Well, it's something which is just regularly come up now and then, and as well in not only this the application of pesticides, but there can be other things. For example, the natural contamination of cocoa beans in some countries with relatively high levels of radioactive elements because of the soil conditions, not because of anything applied to, and which may be then above an internationally accepted limit that would prohibit the use of these, or it needs to be blended and diluted with from other sources and things like that. But it's difficult. I think it probably needs to be sort of sorted out on a case by case. But I wouldn't say, oh, principally in that case, you should accept the continued use of the pesticides, or principally you should go for prohibiting then export from that area. I think it's because it's a difficult decision to make.
And this is where it gets a little bit steep, because in some cases the countries who would prohibit the use of this fungicide because of food contaminants, they would export fresh fruits to you, which are waxed. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're not natural occurring wax, they're chemically produced wax. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's where you find the imbalance, or I guess the unfair trade. Because on one end, they're imposing this on you and say, you can't export bananas to me because you have it treated with X. But I will export apples, grapes, peaches, and so forth with a wax covering that has the same effect as the as the fungicide.
That shouldn't be the case. If both has carcinogenic kind of impact, the vaccine and the fungicide, it shouldn't be unfair, imbalanced trade. And then I think that's, yeah, the decision would be then both treated products shouldn't be traded, or both should be traded, but not in such an imbalanced way.
Concerning the pestilence that is generated when you are doing maybe a pathway initiated area, I guess that's what we have to work with. So, what if the country has not reported any new cases or any case? How do you go about giving requirements for that commodity when you don't even know whether or not that lease is an old lease or is updated? How do you work with it?
So you with ASA initiated PRA, and the risk management option part gives you the opportunity to lump together certain species. You can do a risk management for each of these listed pests, but you can as well say, click on just the one measure option saying this species is already covered by other pest species assessed in this PRA. So you can. Yeah, but if you have a relatively new disease, which is then different from what is from the other species associated with your pathway, then you certainly should kind of specifically look into that. I mean, and you have in the pathway initiated DIA, you have the opportunity to do the different risk management separate for each of these species. So if you have a new disease.
Because in some cases, when you request a pestilence from the squad 3, you are providing that list. So you only have to do with what's already documented.
I suppose if you know, are you saying in the situation where you know that sort of by word of mouth that it's present there, but it's not on the record, you could add that yourself. You can add pests to the pest list, can't you?
Oh, yeah.
So you can do that manually.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can do that. And you can also, as we said before, the better reference as well than the information about the species. Let's say that it's a species which is not in any compendium yet because it's a new emerging pest or disease, then there may be relatively quickly unpublished information out there from colleagues or so who have been dealing with it or found already some treatment or something. And so you can jump on that information as you can get hold of it and can access it. And of course, it's not in the case that is part of the risk assessment, part of the PRA, and of course you wouldn't kind of evaluate that with a higher confidence level because it's not really peer reviewed and tested. But you can kind of put everything as well, kind of initial trials for testing or something. If something is in the process of being tried or research or tested, you can put that information as well in the risk management because it might be, if you revisit and update your PRA a year later or two, you can see that and you can follow it up, and maybe by then the proper results have come in, and updated KPIA accordingly. And of course, in the risk management part, we don't do any rankings of the measures in a way that we describe them as the effectiveness from low to high or anything, as we do in the other part of the PIA. We just have them next to each other, and we just list them and analyze them verbally.
There's one question.
Yeah.
Especially for the risk management, one of the management options to prohibit import of the commodity. However, there was a slide where it shows the measures that you should take should be equal to or about the same as in the PRA area.
That is for species which are already present.
Species also. Yeah. So, for example, if there's something like citrus greening in your country and you prohibit trade of citrus for that reason. And I asked that because I think I saw St. Vincent giving his presentation, and they have citrus greening, but citrus is prohibited. It's a prohibited item. Is that for citrus greening or for other personal disease of citrus? So I looked at that, and based on your presentation, if it's already there, unless you are doing some sort of intense management,
yeah.
Is that the reason that it's prohibited?
Well, all three of the things that you've already said have been taken from ages, right? It's never been very updated. So, probably if it was updated, then because of the situation currently, because we have the citrus community and it's the citrus stocker. So, that might actually make sense, but.
I think Grenada is similar, but well, first of all, you have to determine whether it's plants or fruits. So if it's fruits, fruits as a pathway might be negative. I'm not sure it's actually spread by the fruit. It's the planted material and then the agent beside it. But even adding that, there are other important diseases out there. Citrus,
right.
Kanker is a main one. Trestiza virus. So we still prohibit citrus based on those reasons.
That's the question I asked. Is it the reason? Is it for other personal diseases or just for citrus greening?
Yeah, and it could be as well. One reason could be seems sort of possibly unlikely. Similar to the example I was talking about yesterday with the tobacco whitefly, where you then hidden in the one species, you have microspecies, which are vectors of different viruses. And citrus greening, I think, is there are two bacteria species, the Asian,
the African,
and the American strain.
Yeah. So if you have only one in your country yet, you might still want to prohibit import of citrus because of citrus greening, but really to avoid getting the second species. Any more questions? How about just breaking up for 10 minutes?
Coffee break, yeah.
Coffee break, grabbing a little bit of food and drink, and then bringing it to the table, and then we reconvene in about 10, 15 minutes.
At 11?
Oh, yeah, at 11. I think that would be good.